Nice. Soul on ice. I'ma put my soul on ice. Nice.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and good night. Welcome one and all to Soul on Ice, the podcast. I'm your host, Kwame. Double Trouble is always in the house. Akil Thomas, Elijah Roberts. What's going on, boys?
Not much. Just been hanging out. Kind of chill day today.
Not much for me. Got my siblings with me, so kind of learning how to be an adult. And just moved into my new condos. It's been a week now, so I've been pretty busy just learning like the basics of life basically, and just realizing that I just gotta clean up stuff, and it's just weird. So
you're realizing that groceries cost a lot of money,
and that like you have to feed kids, like they just have to be fed.
Yeah, I hear you. Listen, everybody, today is going to be a great show. We got from the Anaheim Ducks, Erica Branson, and ex-Maple Leaf, Mark Fraser. But first up, you guys know all the crazy antics of Bar Down. You've seen them on social media, on TV. So joining us to talk shop is the co-founder of Bar Down, Jesse Kirschenbaum. What's going on, Jesse?
Hey, guys. Pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us, man. We're going to start off with an easy one. For those who don't know, what is Bar Down?
Yeah, so Bar Down is a company I founded. It's hard to believe. It's been 10 years. So 10 years ago, started it at the University of Guelph as a project. And it's really just steamrolled into a popular lifestyle brand. You know, we started in the hockey space. We've moved into doing universities and team wear. And it's just a brand, really. A lot of people seem to be getting behind, whether you're playing house league or you know, you're in the NHL, everyone has the ability to go Bar Down, and it's really captivated the hockey market, and it's been a fun run so far.
You know, Jesse, me and you've known each other for long years, going way back to BTNL, and when I first met you, like, Bar Down was a pretty small company. It was just shirts and hats and t-shirts, and I saw recently you guys expanded into jerseys, and you're doing some other big things. What's the ultimate goal for Bar Down?
I think for us, the goal is just to, you know, try to impact and get on as many hockey players around the world as possible. Like you said, Elijah, we go way back, which is funny. You know, starting the brand so long ago, we crossed paths at BTNL. I would come in, skate a little bit with the boys. Obviously, your guys' skill level was 100 times mine, but with some of the relationship I had, I was lucky enough to come out. And honestly, you guys wearing it and promoting it really helped, you know, paved the platform. That was before we even had social media. Like, there was no Instagram, there's no anything like that. So it's been a fun ride, but honestly, I think the goal is to just grow the brand as large as we can and get it to a place where it can impact as many people as possible and let as many people enjoy the clothing as possible.
So Jesse, you know, obviously we talked about how you know that I founded a clothing company as well, and just from listening to you talk, I kind of feel like I'm listening to myself talk a little bit, just because of you know, how you started and everything. But I wanted to ask, like, what exactly made you start the brand? Like, that take us back to the day when you're like, you know what, I'm gonna start a brand called Bar Down.
Yeah, well, I mean, first, I mean, it was I love playing hockey, and I only ever played house league my whole life, so you know, I was on different teams every year, making a lot of great friends and connections, and I think that's proven valuable now. But I was at university. It was a fourth year project, an entrepreneurial class. And I just thought it was an interesting idea just to come up with a clothing line. It wasn't really anything too serious. And it ended up doing really well. We won like the class at the University of Guelph, won the first prize. And my professor, Doug Adlam, he was actually an OHL referee. So he really liked hockey, and he just really encouraged me to go after it. So after school, I did work downtown Toronto for a couple of years, just had like a marketing job. But you know, my heart was elsewhere. I was working on it 24/7. I imagine like you are, like when you have your free time, coming up with designs and trying different things. And it's just like a really fun passion project. And I ended up linking up with two of my best friends growing up who are actually identical twins. So having that support to build the brand really, really helped. But yeah, it's been a fun run. It's hard to believe it's been 10 years now, but yeah, it's been great.
So how did the whole television brand, how did that happen?
So it's actually interesting. So TSN Bar Down and Bar Down Hockey are actually two separate entities. So we it's a lot of people don't know that. I mean, we started it about 10 years ago, and they started about, I don't know, maybe 3 or 4 years ago. And they're under the Bell Media brand. So I actually, you know, I know Cabby and I know David Cricks, my man D, who I'm sure you guys are familiar with, with their segments. And they started a separate brand. Basically, the difference is we have all rights to like clothing, that entire marketplace. You can't own the name Bar Down, so technically anyone can use it, but we own it in clothing. But we have a really good relationship with those guys. They're great guys. We've done a couple projects with them, and we have a few exciting things coming, but technically they are separate entities. So a lot of people don't know that, but we've tried to use our you know, relationships and those type of things to work together opposed to working against one another.
So in other words, my intro to you was totally off base. There was no television antics. It's just strictly clothing. And like, you know, that's interesting because I didn't know. I thought you guys kind of were together, but that's actually cool. You guys do stuff together though, as far as like collaboration.
Yeah, I mean, we have some big ideas on the table, and it's unfortunate because with a company as big as Bell Media, there's so many levels it has to go through to execute something. Whereas for me, you know, you message me, hey, you want to come on the podcast? Yeah, no problem. It doesn't run through so many filters, but as I said, they're great guys. I think our brands have helped one another. You know, for me, I see them an opportunity they haven't really explored yet is doing clothing on their shows and whatnot. But yeah, technically we are separate entities. So it's really interesting. I mean, we don't really go out and tell everybody we're different just because it's not really like a topic of conversation. But to clarify, yeah, we are separate.
So Jesse, you mentioned, you know, during your free time, you design stuff, you just organize, you know, future launches and stuff. And, you know, I find myself doing the same, obviously. What would you say your favorite part of, you know, just running Bar Down would be?
Oh, well, I do love the clothing side. I love coming up with cool ideas and seeing what's on trend and trying to, you know, replicate that in a way that, you know, speaks to your market. But I would say probably the relationships with people I've made over the years, as you, Elijah, you know, and obviously you, Akil, the hockey market's really like a small group of guys. Everybody's, I find for the most part, super supportive. And I've got to know a lot of athletes who I looked at an athlete, but I've become a friend. I would consider Elijah the same. Some guys play in the NHL, some guys end up, you know, retiring after the O, but just making all the relationships and friendships has been what I've enjoyed most anyways.
I mean, I don't mean to interview myself, but if I were to ask myself my favorite part about it, I would probably say just probably seeing random people rocking my stuff. I'm not big as you right now, but you know, when I'm just getting a snap from a buddy of someone at a party, like wearing my hat or a hoodie, it's pretty cool. And I remember this one, the first week I was in Peterborough, we were practicing at a practice rink, and these kids were walking out. I don't know what they're doing. They obviously skated or whatever, but a kid was wearing a Zale hat. And like, it was my first week in Peterborough. So I was like, wow, like, I don't know, like, I should say hi or if I should, like, I don't know. It was just kind of awkward, but I one of that moments kind of stuck out to me. So yeah,
I'd agree. It's hard to experience to explain. I mean, you, I guess on the hockey side, like scoring a goal, a big goal, or like you're seen in a different light, but there is something about seeing someone wear your stuff that doesn't even know that you're there. You know, they've you know, obviously you have a great platform. I would say I have not similar, but a good platform as well with relationships, but in the end, they're buying that product because they like it and they believe in it. And it's definitely a surreal experience. It definitely doesn't get old, that's for sure. But you'll see as you grow and just seeing it on, you know, not bigger names, but just different people, different markets. It's pretty cool. When I was in LA, I would see people wearing Bar Down stuff too. And it was just like such a cool experience. You don't know what to do if you should say something. I just usually will be like, nice hat. I try not to get too much in the conversation, but it definitely is a really cool experience for sure.
You didn't want to roll up on them and be like, yo, you're rocking my stuff.
No, I don't know if that's going to help, but I definitely always, and I tell my friends too, I'm always like, if you see someone wearing it, give them a compliment, something they'll remember. So,
you know, what's actually interesting, and this is kind of far left, but it's on the same realm of seeing somebody rock, which you're rocking on NHL, the video game. Do you play NHL 20?
Yeah, of course.
Okay. So you can, if you play EASHL with a group of your friends and you create your player, and they ask you for your play-by-play name, you can be either Kwame or you can be a character called Black Dynamite. These are names that I had, like Sean Ramjam Singh, that's my peoples, he put my names in there. So whenever I'm playing, I hear somebody playing with Black Dynamite, I message them. I'm be like, yo, you're my son. Me, boy.
That's so awesome.
So that's why I'm just like, yo, if I saw someone rocking my gear, I'm going to roll up on them and say, hey, yo, you rocking my stuff.
Yeah, for sure. And Akil, we should collab on a hat or a design too. I found that's like a really cool way to reach network. I mean, we've tried to, like, you know, support other brands and kind of put each other on different platforms. So if you ever want to do anything like that, let me know. We could do something pretty cool.
Let's do it.
Yeah, for sure.
Just to switch gears a little bit, you guys have become way more than just a clothing brand. I know recently you had the Stay the Puck Home campaign, and I know you have something coming up. How did you start the Stay the Puck Home campaign, and is that something you guys look to do a lot more in the future?
Yeah, I mean, just with what happened with COVID and everything going on, it just kind of changed the platform of, you know, I wasn't really calling customers trying to sell to them, or it was just a unique opportunity to maybe try to do something bigger than us. So we've been working with a charity called Hockey Helps the Homeless for years. They run, you know, tournaments all over Canada. They have, you know, ex-alum NHL players come play. You get a player on your team, you do a draft, that kind of thing. And all the money goes towards homeless across Canada. They do a really good job dispersing those funds and helping those in need. And we partnered with them to do a campaign, and it was super successful. I think we donated just over $75,000. So it was crazy seeing like my email every sale is bing, 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 bing. So it was a unique and stressful experience, but it was great. And because of that success, we've actually partnered with the newly formed Hockey Diversity Alliance to drop a limited edition clothing line coming this week. I've known Akeem for years, even on like Snapchat and stuff, just going back and forth. You know, I just had a friendly relationship with him. And when everything came out, I just reached out to him and said, listen, if there's anything we can do, let me know. You know, this is such a crazy time, and I want to help. The only way I really know that I can make a big impact is kind of utilizing my platform and what we just recently did with this charity campaign. And it was a lot of back and forth, just because you know, it's bigger than just two people doing clothing. There's a lot of people involved, and lawyers and all that kind of stuff. But in the end, we were able to work something out, in which it's 100% of the net proceeds go towards the charity. So literally every penny sold goes towards the Hockey Diversity Alliance, split with the Kimaloo's Time to Dream Foundation. So it's, I think, going to be pretty successful. We'll see what happens. It's coming up this Thursday. So I guess a little early plug there, but as I said, it's all for a good cause, and I'm really excited to see what we can donate.
And those foundations, can you break down exactly what those foundations are doing and how people can also go and help, besides you know, picking up a hoodie or a t-shirt from Bar Down?
Yeah, for sure. So basically, when this all happened, I mean, the Hockey Diversity Alliance is so newly formed that they're going to be making charitable contributions, but I thought it would be better for them to make it opposed to us. So we're donating all the funds towards them, and what they're doing is half of it's going towards what the seven guys are going to donate it to. So that's something internally with the Hockey Diversity Alliance. I guess they're going to be announcing that in the next few weeks. The other half, because I've known Akeem and he's kind of led this charge, is his personal foundation, which is the Time to Dream Foundation, all about giving back to those with less money, getting them involved with grassroots hockey. Hockey's obviously a super expensive sport, and Akeem's super passionate about it. So we actually will have a link on our site where you could just donate $5 or $10. I mean, there's no pressure to order anything for us. We just want to try to donate as much as possible. So that's a platform we're familiar with, and we're looking forward to kind of giving that to the boys to see what we can do.
What exactly does this all, like, personally mean to you to be able to do this?
Well, it feels good to give back. I mean, growing up and even now, like, I have a ton of African American friends, and I guess I was blind, but I just didn't realize how big of an issue this was till it all came out. And I've done a lot of listening and just trying to understand and put myself in other people's shoes. And for me, it feels good to give back. But honestly, I think this is something where, you know, the guys in the Alliance are kind of leading the charge, and they're going to decide where the money is best suited and what charities it goes to. For me, just that I can help, honestly, means a lot to me, but it's definitely something bigger than me. And, you know, I'm just trying to do anything I can to help make others' lives, you know, normal and equal. I mean, that's really what it's all about.
So I just want to stay on that just a little bit, and sure. You know, about helping and realization. Where did you grow up?
So I grew up, I was born in Richmond Hill. My parents divorced when I was young, and then I grew up with a single mom in Oakville, Ontario.
Mm-hmm. So you know, you said you have a relationship with Akeem. You said you have a lot of Black friends that you've grown up with. When was that realization, or when was that spark to say, oh my God, wait a second, it's a lot different for them than it is for me? Like, what was that moment that got you?
Well, obviously, like, you know, growing up, you definitely see, you know, doses of racism, but because of the network I was in being friends with, being so close with these friends and not seeing people for their color of skin, I didn't really realize the magnitude they went through, as in they didn't even really share that with me. You know, if anyone ever said anything or there was ever anything like that, I mean, I've been in fights before, like defending my buddies and stuff like that, usually on nights out. But, you know, this whole situation with George Floyd and the media coverage it got, I just, you know, it really just tore, it made me feel sick to my stomach. I didn't understand that, you know, there was such a differentiation in how people felt growing up and maybe the platforms they don't necessarily get. So I think I've known it's existed, but I haven't, you know, listened maybe as much as I should have. And I've always felt that I'm, you know, treat people with the utmost respect. And I truly have never felt that I had any tendency of anything that even would lean towards racism. But obviously, it's very evident that, you know, the way people grow up, that is instilled in some people's ways of seeing people. And it's disgusting, to be honest. So I don't know if there's a specific moment. I was aware that this existed, but obviously the recent platform and all the athletes and everybody kind of uniforming together and saying enough is enough. It's been very, very eye-opening for sure.
So bar down, being in the hockey space, how do you feel personally that this time in our life is going to affect the hockey world as far as inclusion, diversity, racial tolerance goes?
Like, I really like to think that we have the ability to change hockey culture by coming together. Now, I'd like to think, honestly, from my experiences playing hockey, I think 90% of hockey players are unbelievable people. They're unreal. And I think there's definitely maybe people that ruin it for the whole, but I don't know. I mean, I guess Eliza or Kale could probably speak on it better than me, but I feel like, you know, at least my experiences, most guys have been unreal, but they're obviously, you know, I never play high level, so it's hard in those intense games. You know, I'm playing house leagues. I'm not really seeing the intensity that maybe you'd see in like a Marlies Rebels game, but it's been a unique experience just to sit back and listen and really hear people's stories without any judgment, just truly listening and seeing how they feel. And I'm actually watching a show right now called Hollywood on Netflix, and it's highlighting kind of a similar story, but like 100 years ago. And it's crazy, to be honest. I mean, I don't know necessarily that I'm the best spokesperson for this whole situation, but I'd like to think that, you know, I have my ears open, I'm listening, and I'm trying to make sure that, you know, at least on the bar down side, we're making it very clear, even throughout. We recently did a pride drop where we donated the money to the LGBT community. We want to do our part, and we're trying our best to do that for sure.
So once again, let's remind everybody about Bar Down, about some of the initiatives that you are doing right now and how people can get involved and help contribute. And first of all, thank you for sending us the hoodies and the t-shirts and the hats. We really appreciate that. You know, and we're going to rock it with pride and make sure that we represent for you guys as well. But for anybody who wants to get involved, can you just kind of just give us the skew?
Yeah. So I guess this Thursday, June 25th, we're going to run a 1-week campaign for the Hockey Diversity Alliance and their respective charities. 100% of the net profits or proceeds go towards the charities. And you can get it online at www.gobardown.com. We'll be posting it all through social media. And we have a really, really great lineup of about 40 guys. You know, some of them have been your guest. Ron McLean's obviously been awesome. A bunch of different athletes. It's really a great lineup. So we're looking forward to everybody kind of spreading the word and trying to raise money for a great cause and change. You know, we say change hockey culture, but we're thinking, you know, change culture in every day. It's not just hockey, but obviously being a hockey brand, we want to bring it to the forefront that you know, racial names or tendency, anything like that is just completely unacceptable. And we definitely want to put our brand behind a message that we believe in.
Jesse, can you just let everyone know who's listening, where they can find you on social media?
Yeah, for sure. So our Instagram's Bar Down Hockey on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. I'm 31 years old now, so we're a little slow to the TikTok game, so we'll get there soon. But my personal Instagram's at Jesse Kirsch, J-E-S-S-E-K-A-R-S-H. And I'd like to think, you know, just like you guys, if anybody reaches out or has any questions, they're more than welcome to reach out to me. I'm happy to get back to them. And yeah.
Yeah, Jesse, I just want to thank you personally for coming on to do this. I mean, me and you have known each other for probably over 5 years now. And, you know, you've always been great to me, helped me do stuff with Bar Down and personal, and always just someone that I've been able to just talk to if I want to talk to about anything. So personally, thanks for coming out and really appreciate it.
Yeah, no worries, guys. It's my pleasure. And congrats on the success of this podcast. I really think it's informative. I've really enjoyed listening. I think I was telling you guys earlier, I was listening to the Ron McLean episode earlier, the Sarah Nurse episode. It was great. So definitely congrats, continued success. And, you know, please let me know if you guys want to do any giveaways or anything like that. Let me know. We'd be happy to support you guys. And yeah, appreciate you taking the time to have me on and kind of share my opinions on everything.
Well, we got new mics now, so we're on different levels right now. So yeah, Jess, and you know what? I think we love what you're doing, and I think that hopefully we can just keep the synergy together. Love to do a little collabo with Soul on Ice and Bar Down. Let's make it happen.
Love that. And,
yeah. So once again, thank you for joining us. We're going to just pause for the cause for a minute, but when we come back, Erica Branson and Mark Fraser right here on Soul on Ice, the podcast. First up, he was drafted third round, 84th overall in the 2005 NHL draft. His first NHL goal was a beauty. It was against the one and only Marc-Andre Fleury, the son of a former sprinter and Ontario Court of Justice judge, one of the toughest D-men the Toronto Maple Leafs had and gave away for free. I don't understand that. Hailing from the nation's capital, Ottawa, Ontario, Mark Fraser. What's good, my man?
Not much, man. Happy to be here. That's one hell of an intro.
That's how I get down, brother. That's how I get down. Next up to bat, drafted third overall to the Florida Panthers in the 2010 draft. He's represented Team Canada five times. His first playoff goal was from a sweet assist from Evgeny Malkin during the Pens' first round sweep of the New York Rangers. Currently, he's holding it down with the Anaheim Ducks. Also hailing from the nation's capital, we've got Erica Branson. What's going on with you, my brother?
How we doing? Thanks for having me. Great intro again. I love it.
Well, thank you guys. I really appreciate you guys coming on the show. You know, I was really impressed with the articles that you guys wrote for Sportsnet. Eric's was on Sportsnet and Mark's was on the Players Tribune. But let's take it to the beginning. You both rep Ottawa. What was hockey like growing up in the nation's capital?
For me, I mean, I thought it was a very normal existence for me. Like, I didn't have, there weren't a lot of other black hockey players growing up that I would have seen, definitely not in the Ottawa area, and not so much even, like, I guess in the age I grew up playing, in, like, small little tournaments around town. Mm-hmm. But I thought it was a very normal, like, existence for the most part, like, for myself. It was the ODMHS, competitive hockey, like minor hockey league associations, not the same beast that the GTHL is. But, you know, we held our own down here, and the competitiveness was good. The ability, there's plenty of support from everyone that I had encountered. It was just like the normal thing to do, you know, growing up. I played everything growing up, but every one of my boys that were from my town, that were my age group, that are still my boys today, are all like hockey lads, you know. And that's, mm-hmm. I think, similar to a lot of kids. It was a continuously growing culture, a hungry culture in the Ottawa area. We got an NHL team, like, as we were growing up. So that obviously hyped the programs up a lot. But early on, like, from my experience, I thought it was just a fairly normal, you know, experience in the game.
What about you, Eric?
Yeah, I'd have to agree with that. Normal is a great way of explaining it. I mean, we grew up, I'm a few years younger than Mark, and we played within the same associations growing up. And hockey was hockey. Like, where I grew up, my street, every kid, you know, we'd have these 10-on-10 hockey games on the street, like, every night. You know, every team you knew who all your buddies were playing for, who their younger brothers were playing for. You know, I grew up playing with the Gloucester Rangers, and you know, it was pretty much just normal. Like, all my buddies still are all hockey guys. It was a great place to grow up and learn how to play. Like, it's funny, it wasn't as competitive in younger days with the Toronto Crew, but you know, as we got older, we got a little bit better. We could always kind of roll with what was going on down there.
How did you guys first meet?
We trained in Blackburn at Louis Riel High School. They put the largest dome in North America actually behind this school. I went to that high school, and it turned out to be right across the street from where Mark grew up. And our trainer there decided to start a summer training program, and Mark had trained with him. Where was he training out of before?
He was out in the PN. Like, he was with Lauren Goldberg at the time.
Yeah.
This dope guy who'd been around the league in a long time. He had the Alfredsons and the Dan McGillises and a few dudes like that. But yeah, JR eventually wanted to dip to go solo, and the program, the enhanced sports program that Louis Riel was now building, gave JR a chance to kind of grow his own brand out there.
And he took
immediately where we were from.
yeah, like 5 minutes down the street.
Yeah.
So we ended up training there for the first time. I think I was 15 years old. I was going into my draft year in minor midget. So I was a big time soccer player during the summer, and that would be my training. And I kind of got rid of that when I found out JR was making himself available for the summer, and he was bringing a few of his pro guys, such as Mark and, you know, Mike Blunden. That's when we met. Mm-hmm.
You know, you both wrote very powerful articles lately. Like I said at the top of the interview, you know, Eric, yours was on sportsnet.ca. Mark, yours was on the Players Tribune. What was the light bulb moment when you both thought, I needed to speak up?
For me, it was, so Eric actually hit me up, like 4 days, maybe, after George Floyd was murdered. And shockingly, kind of, I think how we both expressed things. Those are like those days after, the weeks after, the week after his passing, nothing really seemed to be getting better. In fact, a lot of the abuse and police brutality and assaults seemed to be getting worse. So Eric felt compelled enough to try to say, or to at least want to say something. So he first hit me up, and we had a lengthy conversation, and he had just, one of the first things he kind of said to me was, you know, I want to say something, but does my voice, like, do people want to hear what I have to say? Does my voice needed right now? Mm-hmm. And my answer was 100%. Yes, absolutely. I had obviously had a number of days to think about my own feelings about what's been going on. I've had a few conversations with friends, family, you know, the whole world was watching. So being the black friend, a lot of people, I think a lot of people were reaching out. I just encourage Eric to, you know, to, for one, your voice absolutely needs to be heard, because being in the representing my majority, you know, the louder you guys can get, the more noise and more movement, you know, black people will benefit from as far as pushing the needle, you know. So I encouraged him to get his thoughts down there. And then basically just that was leading into the weekend. And at the same time, through a couple more conversations, I just said, you know what, like, there's a lot I still want to get off my chest. I'm trying to encourage Eric to, he took the initiative himself to reach out, but I wanted to encourage him, you know, to use the importance of his voice and how much is needed. And I even shared my experience of reading some of my other white peers, guys I never played with, but, you know, Connor Carricks and Logan Couture and Blake Wheeler, they wrote really heartfelt, like what I thought were heartfelt sentiments, not just we need love, not hate. They actually, like, they were outraged and disgusted with what they were seeing. And hearing them say that actually made me emotional, because for the first time I realized I don't have to be afraid of what I want to say about on the race issue, because the white guys are saying it louder, and their ability to use their platform, and they're not even the victims, is totally empowering for me to do the exact same. So very similar, you know, thought of what I was trying to say to Eric is 100% and use your platform, because the majority's voice needs to be heard. But at the same time, how him doing so and he and some of the other players doing so also allowed me to speak up. And to be honest, why I decided to do it is because guys like Eric and other players, white players, who were stepping up and wanting to say something, it truly helped me find my own voice, which is kind of weird to admit that it took my white brothers to speak up for me to find my own voice. But that's 100% the reaction I had from those those dudes not wanting to sit around and take it, you know, just don't want to sit around and say nothing, that this type of behavior, whether it's systemic racism, police brutality, all types of the different social injustices we're now witnessing, their desire in almost humanity and knowing right and wrong to be like, that ain't right, and wanting to use their platform 100% gave me the courage to throw my raw emotion out there and try to have my own little pen to paper convo with humanity and just express to all those who do know me and don't know me, like what type of pain and fear I've been living in. Mm-hmm. That is very much, you know, magnified with what we're seeing right now.
So what about you, Eric? What was your light bulb moment?
It was a combination of things. I think at the core of it, like, I could have written this article and said those words when I was 22, 23, when Eric Garner got killed. You know what I mean? Like, I remember thinking that at that moment and having those feelings. And then, like, 2 days later, I'm playing a game and I kind of just forget about it, which is so wrong. And now I think this thing that with COVID and everybody being at home, it was kind of this, like, the light bulb moment was that I have nothing else but to feel these emotions for an extended period of time and realize that, like, this is actually incredibly messed up. You know, just the fact that the world stopped and that feeling didn't go away. I don't have anything else to do but to think at this time, mm-hmm. You know? It was that whole week, like, when George got killed, it was like that whole week was such a strange time for me mentally, to the point where, like, it was like 3 days before I called Mark and I was like, hey man, like, I have to talk about this right now, like, grab a glass of wine, we gotta
yeah,
like, this is gonna be a long conversation, I got some questions that need some answering, and like, it was great because I talked to him about it, and it was okay. Very quickly, I picked up on the fact that he was carrying around pain that I didn't even know he had. We've been friends for north of 10 years now. Mm. Like, he was carrying a lot of weight in himself that I never saw, that I never even considered. You know what I mean? I didn't know that he was dealing with the same things that we were witnessing on the news, essentially. And at that point, I was like, I have to say something. And personally, I don't like the short form social media 100 character stuff. Like, I really wanted to get my thoughts out there because that conversation was a 3-hour conversation almost. Like, I can't do that in one post. So I just started writing and ended up turning it into something that I think was pretty good.
You know, both of you guys' articles were great. You know, I reached out to Mark right after I read yours. Just how empathetic you were about it. I really appreciate your writing, and Mark's was solid just the same way. You know, Mark, we've known each other for a little while now, and I know how passionate you are about growing the game. What would you say was the hardest thing growing up playing hockey, knowing that you were different than the other kids playing with you and against you?
The hardest, I guess, would be like there wasn't too often in my youth until I kind of got to the junior level. But like the hardest thing is whenever you have to deal with or face any type of, you know, racial attack. That right there is the hardest, because you're being victimized and hated on for nothing you can control. But beyond those actual like racial instances, one of the hardest things growing up playing is, like, as a kid, you don't really look at yourself as different. You know, the guys you grew up down the street from, they might look different than you, but because each step of the way, you're kind of doing the same thing, there's no reason to believe you're really different. But as you get more into hockey, you're trading cards, you're playing on video games, you're playing street hockey, you're doing like eat, sleep, and breathe in hockey with your boys all day long. You start looking for guys like role models, guys you want to look up to. And for me, it was largely like, even I don't know what year of like PlayStation or whatever, Nintendo 64, NHL or site, but like I would make trades for guys who are black because I wanted to have them on my team. So I think one of the hardest struggles at a grassroots level was being able to identify with someone who looked like myself at a top level. For me, like once Jerome McGinley got really big in the early 2000s, I was already a teenager, but that was like a no-brainer because the fact that we were also both biracial, I mean, it was so, I looked at him and I saw my own potential. You know what I mean? Both in his charismatic nature, with media giving interviews, to his leadership qualities, to him being hard as nails. Obviously, I'm not the goal scorer he is. Got a lot of similarities, but a few. But no, but you know what I mean? Like it's sort of that youth struggle to be able to look up at something you aspire to be, something you just idolize, something you like throw your whole kind of life and respect and love into, but not really see anyone who looks like you, who's doing it, you know? So that's one of the challenging things, I think, growing up playing youth hockey as a minority.
Mm-hmm. You know, I loved what you said about the first time you consciously thought about race, Eric. I thought that was just beautiful in that article. Can you talk a little bit more about that moment and how it affected you to this day?
Yeah. Well, it was a beautiful experience at the time. Like maybe I certainly didn't realize it, but like my school that I went to, L'Oréal, was predominantly it was a black Muslim community, which was like I went to a white school that was down the street. I'd walk to and from every day. And, you know, now I'm sitting in my homeroom and there's 30 kids in the class and like 27 of them are black. And it was just like a completely different shock. And in my mind, what happened to me was like, I was nervous because I got to make new friends.
Right.
You know what I mean, it was noticeable in the same sense, right? I was like, I'm in a different place now. And it was never like a bad thing. It was just, I got to make new friends.
Right.
And like, there's certain, you know, I guess like that experience, being so young and being so impressionable at that age, like in grade 9, like you learn and you're pretty much a sponge through everything, and having that experience. And it was such a like slight little shock, I guess. But it was something that like I could relate to after traveling the world and seeing different cultures and seeing different communities, that I was like, well, like I never understood racism, because I'm like, I went to a school that was predominantly black. Like, why is there a problem with this? Like, how is this even a thing? So it was, you know, in hindsight, I guess it was a pretty good thing that happened when I was younger. Like, not to mention, and you know, I kind of, it's the truth, but like, I definitely looked up to Mark, like out of anybody. Like, I was a big fan of Ed Jovanovski, Chris Pronger, you know, Scott Stevens growing up. But like, the guy that I related to the most was Fridge. Cause he was growing up. I told you this, have I not? But like, I used to go see you play for the Rangers when there was like the Junior A Rangers, when there was like 15 people in the stands.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I knew who this guy was when I was young, when I was like 12, and he never knew that I was doing this, but like I was like, dude, this guy's so good. I bought a Kitchener Rangers ticket. I told my dad to take me to a Kitchener Rangers game when I was like 14 years old in a tournament in Toronto. Went out to see him play. Yeah, and I was like, I knew who this guy was, so it was, and like, he was black, so it like, you know.
It was normal to you, it's just normal.
Yeah, it was just normal. That was my normal, which was cool, so. That's where like racism to me is very, very confusing.
Right, right. You know, Mark, when you were told by a hockey parent to go back to the bush in Africa, which is like the weirdest diss I've ever heard in my life. I mean, like, if you're going to be racial in this, you got to come with it. I mean, people don't understand how beautiful Africa really is. So I don't find that to be a diss.
Yeah.
But, you know, also when you were 17, you were told to stick to basketball, which is also code. Mm-hmm. And at 33 years old, a GM who was looking to sign you asked his team captain if you'd be bad for the team morale because you were black. How does one deal with that time and time again and still have a love and a passion for the game?
Good question. The first time it happened, I was kind of unaware of what was really going on until I basically had my own team parents ask me what the guys were saying to me. And then that created a bit of a scene of them trying to, you know, get some kind of an apology for me. So that was probably the first time, and it really like, okay, opened my eyes. I guess I'm going to be looked at differently. You know, it's just like your first slap of reality with it. Like, obviously at that point, I mean, as a young teen, you know that you are different, but you don't, you haven't had anyone like single you out for it. As it continued to go along, the one in juniors with the go back to basketball was some real redneck hick dude who often would chirp beside the penalty box. So that one really fired me up because he was just, that one I felt like was really kind of coming from an ignorance and hate, you know? Yeah, exactly. Like, I'd been in that penalty box before and he had probably chirped me many times before, but he wanted to like say something different this time.
Right.
And
he wanted to get a reaction out of you for sure.
And he certainly did. Now my reaction created another reaction that eventually got him kicked out for a while. But yeah, it was, I guess like the only way to handle it is to handle it, which isn't like great advice or really like a great explanation. But when I guess is the reason why I handled all of it and just like continue to turn the page and move on is because of the dream I'm chasing. So the dream I'm chasing at the time, is to be in the NHL. And then even when it happened, when I was 33, I wasn't chasing the NHL dream anymore because that was now behind me. I was still chasing the dream of like playing pro hockey, making good money, traveling the world, doing whatever, you know, living the dream, still some version of the dream, right? So because you want that almost privilege and because you want that hard work to pay off, you want the gigs, you want to keep going, you want to continue to be a 33-year-old proving to your 5-year-old self that like, I can still do it. I made it. Look at us. We're all, you know, we're grinding still. So you try not to let those hurdles really slow you down. And I guess there's so many little ones throughout like the hockey community system at like coaches in the NHL that were given speeches that for some reason wanted to, you know, I don't know what this one particular coach was. He wanted to, you know, talk about how tough something was, but he's like, any of you guys ever been in prison? And then he looked at me. and it would get that reaction. Everyone would kind of laugh at it, kind of thing. But it's like, why? You know what I mean? But like, he's obviously saying something and he's trying to be funny about saying it. But it's just one of those many things. You just got to be like, you got to honestly just smile and like let it roll up your shoulder, let it roll up your back. Cause you literally have to have a face on being like, I just got to let this older white guy think I'm cool with like what he's doing. Because if I'm not, whether that's a GM, a media member, a coach, a parent, whatever. You just kind of got to like smile and nod and smile and like be one of the boys and let you know that you're cool with all this. Like you're a good character guy, man. Racism's not going to stop you. A little couple jokes, whatever, insinuations, threats, they're not going to slow you down. And you sort of have to just like let it honestly roll because what's bigger is chasing the dream. And what's bigger is achieving my goals. What's bigger is providing for my family, you know? So if this is my means of eating, then I can't really pay too much attention to these fools trying to slow me down because there's a lot of fools trying to slow me down. These are just the really dumb ones who are using my color as a reason to try to slow me down.
Yeah.
So try not to let it affect you. It's hard to be honest. Some hurt more than others, but you just try not to dwell on it, I suppose, and try to like look at the person with ignorance and just keep on moving, because you're chasing, you know, you're doing the unthinkable. You're a brother in the NHL, providing for his family. Like, you know, there's been a lot more harder lumps taken to get to where I am now than to let these ignorant fools slow me down. So it happens. You just got to honestly roll with it.
Eric, how does it make you feel knowing that your friend Mark and other Black athletes have had to or have to deal with some sort of prejudice just to play the game of hockey that you've played all your life as well?
Yeah, it's crazy. It's really crazy. And here's the thing with the hockey community. Like, I think it's pretty safe to say, like, 99% of people in the hockey community have good hearts, good souls, and, like, agree that this should no longer be the case. This is where my sense of disappointment came from, and this is where, like, I had to write the article myself, was that I just being unaware of it was, and realizing how unaware of what was going on I was, I was just, like, incredibly disappointed with that thought. Mm. And the fact that it happens, the fact that it really is subtle what you dealt with. Like, that story you just said about your coach and prison, like, that to me, like, boggles my mind. But at the time, maybe I would have been sitting in that room and I wouldn't have picked up on what you were picking up on. You know what I mean? It's just sad. But at the same time, like, this is something that we could do. I've leaned on the hockey community my whole life. It's been a part of my life. It's something that has helped me become the adult I am today. Mm-hmm. And I believe that this community can be better for its members. Yeah. I truly do. And that's like, I understand people should be mad and we need to do this, like, functionally and powerfully and strongly, but I believe that people are here to make the right decisions. I'm trying to, you know, bring that forward and be like, no, like, we can be better. Like, you always say, like, you want to leave something for your kids 20 years down the line. Like, you want to leave something that your kids or that yourself you'll be proud of looking back mm-hmm. on. Mm-hmm. Like, why wouldn't the NHL do that? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, why wouldn't the NHL look in 20 years and in 2040 that, like, no, we took these steps and we're not there yet. But, like, look at the kids coming in now, how comfortable they are.
Yeah,
no, that would be the experience that I think, like, why would you not strive for that?
Yeah, I totally agree. That's, like, that's powerful, bro. That's powerful, because that's what it's all about. You know, for the last couple of years, I've been, you know, creating content for the NHL. The NHL's blessed me to be able to go and travel to different cities and show my film and have, you know, great conversations with staff and you know, fans and even some players. And I think for me, my motivation is to create a safe space for the kids coming up, just like what you're saying. It's like, we've got to make sure that this game, when we leave it in whatever form we do, is in good hands, and that these kids can grow up and say, you know, wow, you guys went through hell. I don't know how you guys did it, but it's easy for us now, you know? Mm-hmm. Mark, a lot of Black voices have stepped up and are willing to tell the story of what they've gone through, what they're going through, and what they want to see for the future. What will help those voices reach the masses? What can the hockey community do to make sure that when you speak, you know, the masses really take in what you're talking about?
The hockey community can start by, which a lot of the members of the hockey community have already done, is start by listening, actually listening. It's great that there's been an acknowledgement now throughout society and the hockey community that racism is definitely a thing, it's definitely prevalent, it's definitely alive and well. But to acknowledge now that, to start listening to what Black players have to say, and to actually start to understand, like, the one of the most powerful responses I got, I guess, for myself on my article was white people, the majority, say, and members of the hockey community saying, you know, the way my message was conveyed, they can now understand. You know, they can understand the daily thought or struggle or pains or just weight that sometimes the Black community has to carry. May not be every single day of our lives, but in general, what we kind of have to carry, you know, by articulating, imagine the type of pain you'd have to be in to want to burn down your own city and buildings and stuff. Genuinely and kind of softly trying to explain that to them, the response has been good, because people are like, well, you know, at first we kind of would look at the riots and think, what are these, you know, idiots doing? But now we're understanding where this all comes from because we're listening to your words. So I would say hockey community, they need to listen to what the brothers have to say. They need to listen to not just the pain that they felt in the past, and things they're doing within the present, but like what their plans are to help grow, you know, and to encourage that. And then to just reciprocate and like, and, you know, retweet and just repost and bring power to their voices by using all their other platforms in the hockey community to bring attention and awareness to this issue, but also help support and promote the brothers and what they're trying to do through their own experiences. You know, the one thing I wouldn't want to see necessarily the hockey community do is like something that's almost like cheesy in the sense of, well, let's pay homage to all of our brothers in the league who have like been struggling. Because we don't need our struggles to be highlighted. It's right. It's about through the struggles, these guys should be getting praised. Right. These guys should be getting celebrated and encouraged and have the resiliency be so. Everyone who's made it to the NHL has fought through, has some sort of resiliency in them. They fought through a hell of a different series of adversities to get there from minor league hockey, injuries, whatever, right? Affordability. But once you get there, and we're all kind of now on that same level, there's a group of us that has continued to have to fight through a different challenge of adversities that 99% of the guy arrest don't. And celebrate that. Celebrate that struggle. Don't have to like focus on the struggle, but celebrate the greatness that's come through the struggle. And that, I think, will continue to help understand and acknowledge what the struggle's been about, but also because we're not focusing so much on the bad, but also on the good that's come from it, I think the white hockey community can start realizing some of the greatness that they have in these athletes.
Yeah.
And how can we channel into finding more of them?
I think it's about normalizing. Because my thing. You've got to normalize the Black face and the Black voice in the game of hockey so that when you're seeing somebody of color, you're not like, whoa, there is a Black player or there is an
East. Exactly. Like,
it's just, there's a player. You just want to see it, just a player.
Exactly. And not in the way where it's been normalized in the sense where in the past, well, hey, we got Black guys and people of color who play hockey. So, like, of course we're with it. Of course we're woke. Well, no, because you're not really at all. But yeah, exactly. Normalizing it in the sense that, you know what, if we listen and understand them and we celebrate, like, not so much the struggle, but also, like, the triumphs, to the point where, like you said, you get it to a normal thing where it's like, these guys are just regular OGs, like a lot of the other guys in the league, but let's at least, like, just acknowledge some of their struggles, give them a pat on the back. And I think that will encourage future generations of minorities to be like, yo, hockey seems like it's actually a pretty cool game, instead of having to look at it and being like, hockey doesn't really seem like a game for me because there's no one I can identify with in that ever on television, you know, just make it normal. Instead of coming back from a commercial on Hockey in Canada, you know, instead of it being this particular face, let's make it this particular face.
Right.
Why not? You know how many millions of people are watching throughout Canada anyways that are not white. So like, why not?
Hockey has always been known as the old boys club. Is this moment in life the kick in the butt needed to tell the old boys, time to retire, it's time for the leaders of the new school? What would you think about that, Eric?
I don't know. I think maybe. I think this has been, I mean, this is the craziest thing that I've experienced in my life in terms of the whole world coming to an abrupt halt. And I think, I mean, being able to stop and actually, like, reflect on the current state of like many things, this is a great time to pick up knowledge and to learn and to be aware of stuff. And I mean, the world is getting more and more progressive as we go along. And I agree. I think the NHL should be doing a lot to follow that trend. Mm-hmm. For sure. I don't think, you know, the old boys, I mean, in the same sense, like, we need those guys there too, because they are a part of history.
Yep.
And whatever that history may be, it is still is your history. However, if we don't have an open mind towards our future and we rely too heavily on that, then we're not learning from our past, if that makes sense.
Totally makes sense, man.
You see what I mean? Like, you just want, like, I don't want to be that league that doesn't do anything about this. And, like, you know, people are like, don't want to play hockey when they're later. Cause here's the other thing about hockey that's really difficult, especially in Canada. Like, we're competing against a pair of shoes, a public basketball court, and a court in terms of affordability.
Yeah.
Hockey, like, it's a lot of money to put your kid in the hockey now, and we want to attract the best athletes we possibly can, white, black, Asian, Indian, you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't matter. You want to attract the best athletes. And we need to be the ones sitting there with the biggest open arms, I think.
Mm-hmm. Going forward, Eric, I know you want to see change. What are some of the things you'd like to see done from a league or a team perspective? Like, you know, when you get back to normal with Anaheim, what are some of the things you want to make sure is brought to the table?
You know, so what's interesting about that is I don't really know, to be honest with you. I've never actually had a black teammate.
Okay.
I don't know, but like my thought is like, I would challenge every single one of my teammates personally. And myself to be like hyper aware of that situation. If a player comes in, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. The black player comes in, like, making sure, like, we talk about, like, the Czech kid who comes in and he's in North America for the first time, or a Russian kid who doesn't speak any English. Like, yo, can we take care of this kid? Because he doesn't, you know, mm-hmm. we don't know if he's going to be all right or not. Like, I don't think I ever considered it, but like, let's say you have a black Canadian kid coming in, like, that feeling and that sentiment might be needed as far as what that kid's dealing with outside of the rink.
Right.
You know what I mean? And right. kind of handling that situation in a similar situation to, you know, having a new Czech kid who doesn't speak any English.
Right.
And just making sure, like, yo, you okay? Like, you know, is everything all right? What do you need from me?
You know, it's interesting you said that, because we had Joel Ward on the show and he talked about bonding with his teammates. And when he was in Nashville, they would always take him to the country and western clubs, and yeah. he'd feel so out of place, but he would stick it out because he wanted to be a part of the group and be, you know, loved by the boys. But when it came to him picking a night, and he would take the guys to like a reggae club or a hip hop club, those guys wouldn't last like 5 minutes. Mark, have you ever had experiences like that as well when you were playing?
Not as drastic as that with Wardo. I'm sure it was the difference, like, being in Nashville, there's, you're really geared towards one type of music and kind of like club or night experience versus the other.
But there's a huge black community in Nashville.
Well, no, exactly. I agree. But when you're talking about hockey players in Nashville,
right,
you only want to go to this spot, you know, all right. of a sudden everyone's a big country fan. When it was like, oh, don't you guys like what I've been hearing? You guys listen to hip hop for a while in the room, but now all of a sudden, right. we're all gonna pretend like we're just country fans. Not so much in like that sense of the music, because I guess in my career, I was lucky that I played in a lot of big cities too, for like Toronto and Jersey was so close to New York and all. So, like, when we did go out, probably hip hop was the common DJ, you know, genre. But I've had to try to do it like with lunches before. When I played in, it might have been in Binghamton or someplace, like that's somewhere in the minors. But anyways, I found like the one Caribbean, the one Jamaican shop in town, you know, mm-hmm. where I could go get a nice jerk chicken meal. And then a couple guys the odd time would like come with me, but I was like, you know, it is after practice. Hey, let's go to our local like a sandwich joint. We're like, on any given day, there's like 10 guys after practice getting a sandwich and a soup, whatever, because they're dynamite. well, this other place is dynamite too. You want to go hit? Nah, what do they got? Nah, is that spicy? Jerked it? Nah, I'm all good. That's spicy. And you're trying to convince them, you're like, oh, like, you ever had a patty? You've ever had roti? You've ever had this? And like, right. Whatever you're saying just sounds like foreign language to them. And it was honestly only ever a couple. It was like my roommate, Mike Koskoe, who's an awesome dude. And then one other guy would come. And they obviously would love the food. And then we were the only people in the whole restaurant. I'd be making jokes like, yeah, you know, I booked this whole thing just for us. I thought all the boys would come. But like, no one was really down to even try that. And I was like, man, this food's delicious. I'm not even like trying to bring you the craziest stuff. I'm just part Jamaican. And this food's actually dope. But they just aren't really comfortable getting into what they don't know.
I think that goes back to what you were saying, Eric. It's like, if you had a black player come on your team, it's almost like, to me, what you could do to help them feel a little bit more comfortable is be like, hey, let me get some of your experience. Like, where do you want to go? Where do you want to go to eat? What's your experiences like? You know, so that they can feel like they're a part of the ecosystem of the team as well, right?
Yeah. And I think that's the reality. Like, I'd say the one thing that I've taken from this experience, the whole article and what's gone on over the last 3 weeks, the biggest takeaway for me is that I thoroughly enjoy listening and learning and like actually hearing what you guys have to say. Like I'm enjoying being the outskirt of this conversation. I'm enjoying listening to you guys talk about this and like how am I going to find out if I don't listen and hear about it? Mm-hmm. You know, and I think, I guess from that standpoint, I guess if you want to talk about what my team is like, be inquisitive, listen and learn, just like Mark's saying, like, if we can do that, then it's a step in the right direction.
You know, the part that touched me the most in your article, Eric, was when you said what happened to George Floyd could easily have been Mark. How scary was that realization for yourself?
That's where like the true emotions like came out on my own. Like it was hard to tell that story. I mean, my wife's looking at me right now. She's sitting upstairs. But, like, every time I would read through that part, and, like, I tested this article out on my in-laws and my wife and some of my buddies and stuff. But whenever I got to that part, it was, like, so hard for me not to tear up.
That's what
it was. Like, I was working on this thing, and I probably did it, like, 40, 50 times just reading it out loud. And it was, like, it was so hard not to tear up because you realize, like, This is my boy. Like, this is one of my dudes that I grew up with. Like, Mark was my officiant at my wedding this summer. Yeah. Like, you know, like I can't, like, imagining life without this guy here would be so, it'd be so wrong. And like, I hope that somebody could relate that experience. Like maybe for example, you like your coffee shop, your barista happens to be a black individual who you really like.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, how devastated would you be if you didn't get to see that person every single day?
Yeah.
Or, you know, maybe it's your friend's girlfriend or something like that who's a black individual. Like, what would happen to that person? Like, how sad would you be if that person was no longer in your life? Mm-hmm. And like, trying to make that connection was tough, but it was, that was the essence of why it was written too.
Mark, you said this is not a black only fight. This is not a fight that solely belongs to people of color. Can you explain that a little bit more for people?
What I just meant by that was, obviously, you know, people of color, blacks are the victims here. But in order to get real change, or to see real change, whether that's through different, you know, leaders stepping down, new ones coming in, the voting process, new legislation and bills being passed, whatever that may be, the amount of noise that needs to be created, the amount of outrage that needs to actually be felt in order to get to that point where the tolerance of this is no longer acceptable. The black population isn't strong enough to do that on their own. They need the support of the majority, which would be the white population. And basically together, we have enough power in the people to make noise, to make change. But because blacks are the victims in this particular topic, the pressure of creating change can't solely fall upon our shoulders. Because in my, not that I have any scientific proof to back this, except for the fact that in history, in Black people's history in America, North America, Canada, and the oppression that they've experienced. They've never been able to be loud enough for it to stop, ever. Like, it's, in fact, heavy systematic racism has only been in our history in North America. So in order to actually see change, in order for people to watch what's happened to Breonna Taylor or Ahmaud Arbery or George Floyd, or even stories like what's happened to Joel Ward or Wayne Simmons or Devontae Smith-Pelly in hockey. If you want to be, if that disgusts you or outrages you enough that you know it's not right and you want to do something about it, leaving it just to the Black community to make some noise and try to then hope that they can see change won't be enough. We need everyone to be a part of this fight, because as much as the root of the evil is a color issue, we're also supposed to be doing this good against evil fight. You know, my great grandfather fought in the World War One against evil. My grandfather was a second World War II pilot for Canada and fought evil. You know, these men, these guys younger than myself, like men, young boys, had to step up in the face of evil for what was right. We have to do the same. You know, this is something historical that I never thought we'd go through, but we are in my generation, in my time. Mm-hmm. But it's in the history of Blacks, you know, fighting against oppression. They've never won. And no minority group has ever won solely as remaining as the minority group. They need help from the majority. They need help from all types of people. And this is, like I said, this is like a goodness to your heart type problem. This isn't necessarily just, it is a race issue to the heart of it, but it's also just a people. If you can't be on the side of the fence where every breath of life should be equal, you know, then you should be able to help support us in making all types of noise until we can see, like I said earlier, some type of needle movement to support this whole movement. It can't solely remain just to the one victimized race. Yeah. We'll never get anywhere.
Allyship.
Exactly.
It's needed. Eric, have you run into any criticism since your article came out? And if you did, do you even care? Or more importantly, what would you say to those who might say all lives matter, or come on, Eric, this has no place in the game of hockey?
Oh, it certainly does, for sure. Mm. I mean, above and beyond being a hockey player, like, we're humans first. And this is a human issue. So, of course, it's definitely extremely relevant. And no, to be honest with you, I haven't received, honestly, any criticism. I was kind of nervous about it. Because I didn't want to like see it. I really didn't want to see any criticism. Like, it would have been really disappointing if I wrote something
right
like that and people like were blatantly calling me out on it. Cause that would mean it was misunderstood, or like maybe racism is a little bit more prominent than I actually believe it to be, which would have been very, very disappointing in and of itself. But everything I've gotten back has been like, yo, you know what? Like, a lot of my white buddies have texted me and been like, you know what, man, I felt exactly the same way as you.
For real.
He's like, I felt exactly the same way as you. He's like, I'm really glad you did that. And like, thank you for doing that. And like I'm with you, and I'm with the Black community and all of this. Like, I'm gonna do this. Like, I finally, like, I have buddies, and I know this is, it's small, but I have a couple buddies who messaged me and they're like, man, I've been trying, like, thinking about what to post on social media. I've just been so scared about it to like put it out there. Like, I don't know if people want to hear from me. And like, I just posted it 2 seconds ago and texted you.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, cool. Like, that's great. So, yeah, it's been great. I'm really happy.
That's awesome. How about the Ducks? Has your organization reached out to you to, you know, maybe commend what you said, or, you know, kind of stand behind you?
I started writing it pretty much by myself, and I had like a few people within an inner circle under like knowing that I was doing this. Mm-hmm. And I ended up getting pretty close to it, and I called Ryan Getzlaff, and I was like, hey man, like, just so you know, this thing's, you know, coming down the pipeline. Like, I want you to read it, tell me what you think. And like, right. I mean, if you don't like it, like, I don't really care, I'm putting it out, but I don't think you're going to dislike it. And he texts me back. He's like, man, he's like, extremely well written. Like, here's my little thoughts and like just grammar stuff, which is boring in and of itself.
Good stuff. It's Grammarly right there. I love that.
But other than that, Other than that, he's like, I got your back, man. He's like, good for you. Like, good for you doing this. I sent it to Bob Murray. I sent it to Dallas Eakins, our head coach. Dallas ended up calling me. We had an hour-long chat about this issue as well. And they were super pumped about it. And that was like, all right, let's go. Let's put this thing out here.
There you go. You know, my biggest worry is that soon as we get back to whatever type of normal, you know, people are just going to go back to the same old, same old. How do players like yourself, Eric, that are in the show, make sure that things move in the direction of change?
Well, I think you can control what you can control. And within that ability of what you can handle and what you can control, like, do that to the best of your ability. You know, on a realistic standpoint, like, I'm going to continue to look at, you know, petitions. I have a bunch of subscriptions to a lot of, like, historical articles that I've been reading about the black history that I've, it's been interesting. So I'm interested in it and I want to learn more. Mm-hmm. But I think it's like, just, we've been awakened to this. We've taken a step forward as a community, a large community. Let's not take a step back.
Yeah.
Let's not do that. Let's challenge ourselves to just continue and have that mindset. Like, no, let's just keep getting better, keep getting better. And that can be with whatever ability you possess. You know what I mean? You know, some people are going to be able to, you know, write an article such as Frazier and I and really, you know, try and push this issue. Or some people are going to say, like, are going to be the ones who say, like, hey, can you go say sorry? Like, that wasn't really nice what you just said. Mm-hmm. And that little step, or like going up to a black kid who looks sad because of a racist issue, you know, you go up to him and say, hey, listen, it's okay, buddy, come over here. Like, yeah. We got you. Like, that's kind of the step that you need to do. It's what I can control, is to be good and aware of this in my own life. And hopefully people follow suit.
Well, I hope that I can, you know, introduce you to Kim Davis over at the league. I think, you know,
yeah,
she would love to speak with you and, you know, and add you into the family of the crew that is trying to, you know, take the game to the next level, because we need guys like you that are in the show that are willing to stand beside the change, you know. And last little thing I wanted to really ask was, you know, for you, Mark, how proud are you of Eric for doing what he did and writing that article?
I'm really proud. I'm really proud that he took the initiative, for one, to reach out to me when he did. As I expressed earlier, you know, I was hearing some of my former white peers speak up on these issues that actually empowered myself. So Eric falls, you know, in line with them as well, as far as Eric's desire to use his platform also gave me courage to speak my own truth, use my own platform to do something as well. So that's right off the bat. I'm very proud of him for that. And then I'm proud of him to sort of want to want to continue on with the article, to want to continue on with, like, it's not easy, you know, putting your thoughts down like that. And then, as you mentioned before, from the first edit to the final grammatical edits, to still, like, be confident that, like, okay, this is definitely still my message. I still want to get it out. There's a lot of, like, processes along the way where, like, this is harder than I thought. Maybe I'll just, you know, thumb out a tweet. You know, I'm proud of him for not doing that. I'm proud of him for listening to some of what I said, I guess, when he was a kid that I don't really remember telling him. But, you know, a large part of that has always been, and you would know this a little bit for me as well, Kwame, like, community is a big thing for me. And like the hood you're from and the areas you're from, and that's something that I've always been proud to represent. So I'm also proud of him in the sense that, you know, he acknowledges he's moved on to some pretty cool things in life, but he acknowledges where he came from, and our relationship is a part of that, right? Our relationship is a representation of the fabric of Gloucester and Blackburn Hamlet and where we grew up together and the bond that we share with each other. So I feel like, in a way, that I'm proud that he's also looking at me as, you know, home. And when you have a home, or sorry, a homie who could be potentially the one who's down and out, and have that hit you the way that it did with him. And definitely hearing him talk about how emotional it can get him obviously has the same effect on me. I'm just so proud that he took the time to listen, to open his heart, that he was took the initiative to say, I don't care what criticism I may receive for this. This is bigger than that. It's bigger than hockey. And I'm really proud that I can mean enough in his life that you know, considering some of the things, the burdens I've had to bear is always almost enough for him to want to take such a loud public stance against this. I mean, that's friendship for life right there. You know, I'm very grateful to have a friend like Eric and who can use his platform to do these types of things. And if our relationship or my influence in any manner in his life, like helped him then turn around and do this for me, then I'm just so happy I didn't waste time on someone who wasn't going to learn or wasn't going to hear or wasn't going to acknowledge me as a human the way I was trying to acknowledge them as a human. For all of that, I'm just incredibly grateful and proud of the guy, because I've always been proud of you, Gritty, and your hockey career, but this is something that, you know, is well surpasses, in my opinion, any type of hockey accomplishment.
Now, that's all great and sweet, you guys, but Goody, if you were jumping up on the rush, Fraser was in the corners.
He's done.
Oh. Yeah, maybe, but I'd be willing.
You'd be willing.
But he's a Blackburn boy. That's why he'd be willing.
Yeah, I'd be willing.
He's from Blackburn Hamlet, but it doesn't mean he's going to. We're very willing.
I love that.
We don't always win.
So listen, boys, this conversation has been great, and I appreciate you guys, you know, kicking it with me for such a long time and just talking some great, great stuff about what's going on in the world and how we're going to get this change in the game of hockey. But I got to flip it. 1 second, okay? We do this with every single guest. We get our top five songs. And how this works is these are the five songs you are going to listen to on your way to the rink, in the locker room, that zone you out. So what we're going to do is going to go all five, and we're going to go 1-1. Goody, then Fraser, all right? So Goody, you get the first one. What's your number one song you're going to be listening to?
You want like number one, one?
Well, no, it doesn't have to be any order, but what's the first song you're going to, you know, give me five.
Okay, well, so I've listened to Shoot to Thrill by AC/DC before every single game I've ever played since I was like 7. So
Okay, yeah. That's one. Yeah. I like that. That's energy. That's energy right there. That's high energy.
Yeah.
And you wonder why I struggle to find some normalcy in this hockey, in this community. Some comfort.
Hey. Okay. I'll bring it back.
I like it. Okay, so my number one is the legendary, my boys, the legendary Roots Crew, Fire. The Fire is the name of the track. Quick side story. I had a chance to ask Black Thought, like, man, I work out to that track all the time. Like, sports metaphors and everything, it's dope. But where'd that come from? And he goes, I was thinking of a Gatorade commercial when I wrote that one. Yeah. All right, cool. Well, it got me hype, so I like that.
There you go. Goody, number two.
I like Jeezy Put On.
Man. Okay. Jeezy. Phrase.
I'm going Mac Miller, Brand Name. I think it's a real hype track. It's kind of one of his unknowns, but it's one of those, I don't know, when I hear it, I can't not get hyped up. I can't not get excited for what I'm about to do.
Rest in peace to Mac Miller for sure. Mm-hmm. Good. So this is your third song.
Okay, well, this is where I'm going to start losing you guys. I hope you don't. But I listen to a band called Light the Torch. I'm a big, big, like, hardcore, like, metal fan, believe it or not.
Okay.
Yeah, love it. I know it's different, and I do not – when Mark and I are in the gym and I put anything on, it's like it gets turned off quickly.
Immediately.
Okay, what was it again? Because I'm going to look it up.
So I got – it's got a band called Light the Torch, and it's called – Pull My Heart Out. Believe it or not, the lead singer is a black man.
Listen, bro, like, crazy, don't think but, that yeah. We're too far off. I was a metalhead growing up, okay?
That's a crazy thing about, like, the music side, the music that I listen to is that it's pretty much, like it's very much the minority's style of music.
Right,
You go to, a hardcore show in Southern California, mm-hmm. like, you're definitely seeing your little white kids, but you're seeing, like, It's a combination of everybody.
Mm-hmm. Were you a big Living Color fan?
Nice to you.
Yeah, I did like Living Color.
Yeah. Okay, Fraser, you got number three. Your three.
J. Cole, GOMD.
Okay, a little sweet.
It is sweet, but see, this is the thing for me. I don't need to get hyped up like that. Like when I lift weights, when I'm working out, I listen to like Lana Del Rey.
Okay.
Because for me, I don't like what I'm about to do, so I just need to be put into like a peaceful mind state to go do it. And a lot of going into games, I'm fighting off like weird nerves and anxiety of like this, like I know I can go do the job, but like, I'm afraid of failing. Right. So at times I just need to I need to remove myself. So sometimes I just need something like that's just gonna hum to me and let me like ride this wave. It's almost a calm before the storm.
Okay.
So I need to kind of like, I'm almost so jacked up myself. I need to sometimes bring myself down.
Right.
So that I can get it then and go kill it.
Good. Your fourth pick.
God's Gonna Cut You Down by Johnny Cash.
Jeez. Ooh,
okay.
Yeah, you're trying to hurt somebody in the corner.
Yeah.
You're picking it. That's personal. You're getting personal. You're getting personal now, bro. Fraser, your number four song.
All right. This one gets a little grungy. This is Schoolboy Q, John Muir. I think it's dope. I think the bridge in it from where it starts to where it finishes are two totally different tracks, but yeah, Schoolboy Q, John Muir. It's a pretty cool lookup.
All right. And Eric, your last song.
Straight Out of Line by Godsmack.
Jesus. Listen, Eric, you're trying to really hurt people, bro. You're coming with like heat, man.
Yes, sir.
Like, you need a little Shania Twain or something to calm you down.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, do you want to do my top five of sitting around my campfire? Completely different story.
Yeah, right. Okay.
Yeah, right. No, it's not. It's all screamo still.
What are you talking? Are you crazy?
Wow. Okay. I like that. I like
actually, just to let you know, Superposition, Young the Giant. Tell me that's not a great song.
Okay. All right. You must have found that one on the radio, I guess.
Crazy. What's your last song, man?
Okay. I don't have any Kung Fu Kenny on here, but I'm going to give him a shout out because he's a feature on this track. But it's Nipsey Hussle, Dedication, featuring Kendrick Lamar.
Okay. You guys got some solid tracks, man.
Thank you.
You guys got some solid tracks. Listen, boys, it's been a blast hanging out with you. Fraser, I'm going to say this. God's honest truth, man. When you were playing with the Leafs and you guys made that run in the playoffs and you got that puck to the head and you were gone, I knew we weren't going to go any further. I knew that because you were lights out, man.
Appreciate that, man. I really
good. Wasn't he lights out?
Does mean a lot.
Series? Yeah, it was the swinging point in the series. I'm telling you, I watched that whole series,
buddy. Like it crossed my heart.
Yeah,
I agree.
And then the next year, I don't see you back there. I'm just like, good lord.
Yeah, wasn't getting the sniff at all. No.
But you killed it, man. I was a fan right then, and I was looking forward to you so. When you reached out to me on Twitter, I remember telling my girl, I'm like, yo, this kid right here, that's the dude. She's like, well, message him back. I'm like, okay, relax. All right, boys, thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate your time. And yeah, man, you guys just keep doing what you're doing. Goody, I hope to see you in the travels in the league, and you know we'll have to chop it up next time I'm out in Anaheim, definitely. And we'll keep it moving, boys. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot, Kwame.
Thank you for having us. And when we make it, we gon' put our soul on ice. 'Cause when they doubted us, we did it twice. I guess the poop is in the freezer. They tried to get rid of us, but they need us. So I need you like you need me. I need you like you need me. We double up when our numbers come through the TV. Yeah. Soul on ice. I'ma put my soul on ice. Nice. You goddamn right, I'm screaming on that beat. I got a match screaming on the streets. We in the club, stadium, and the arena, cousin. Put me on ice and I'm hitting that top. Trees are dusting, fussing, fighting. With myself is enticing. My enemies in the mirror, and he's always reciting the poetry of my power. Statistic of my weakness. Shadow boxing with Tyson. I'm trying to show y'all I'm beating them to the punch. Competition on the table. It's time for...
lunch. Though my mission is unstable, I'm scoring once, twice, three times, and I'm taking hats. Men lie, women lie, progress is based upon the facts. So let that baby shine. They sold the show and older, they live within the grind. Now take them out that stroller, cause coming up is a champ. Prediction of Ali, he changed his name to Muhammad. We changing free to a fee, it's up to me. And when we make it, we gon' put our soul on ice. Cause when they doubted us, we did it twice. I guess the proof is in the freezer. They tried to get rid of us, but they need us. So I need you, like you need me. I need you, like you need me. We double up when our numbers come through the TV. Soul on ice, I'ma put my soul on ice. Nice. Let's dedicate this one to Jaden Linda. Let's escalate to Caddy, crush the Pinto. Or maybe you prefer that Benz. Why? That big truck, I don't give a f***. Only really want a house for the kid. Let's take it far down on the competition. Competition is nonsense, it's me and my soul's decision. Yeah, I only work against myself. I play against you to bench you. I'm throwing all shots to the shelf. Yeah, the top is the topic. You checking your armor. My wheel telescopic, so I'm steering my karma. The future is mine, like receiving the pass from Jesus or Jordan or Crosby, Stills and Nash. We young, and when we make it, we gon' put our soul on ice. Cause when they doubted us, we did it twice. I guess the proof is in the freezer. They tried to get rid of us, but they need us. So I need you, like you need me. I need you, like you need me. When our numbers come through the TV, soul on ice, I'ma put my soul on ice. Nice.